This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Give Me Your Answer True, Book 2 in the Fishtales series, written by Sue Ann Lacker, performed by Vanessa DeSilvio. A human being with no daemon was like someone without a face, or with their ribs laid open and their heart torn out, something unnatural and uncanny that belonged to the world of nightghasts, not the waking world of sense. Philip Pullman, The Golden Compass. We come back from war, changed. Joseph Bianco. In broad daylight. The day dawned, bored, and looking for trouble, and Daisy woke up needing to get high. Not a breath of air came in through the screened window of her room. The sunlight splashing across her bed was hot and sullen. Against her face, her boyfriend's back was cool and damp. Eric ran like an engine through the night. His sleep generated a dry, thrumming heat that broke like a fever when he awoke. The hair at the back of his head divided into small, wet sections.
"What time is it?"
he asked, his voice a croak. Eyeballs clanging in her head, Daisy twisted back to look at the clock on her bedside table. 7:10? They both kicked the twisted, crumpled sheets away from their legs, turned pillows to the cool side, rolled and rearranged, and fell back asleep. When Daisy awoke again, she knew the morning had slipped away, and afternoon now closed around her room like an angry fist. Eric's shoulders pushed back against her belly and chest. His skin had dried. His hand ran along her thigh.
"What time is it?"
he asked. She looked. "Almost 12:30. I need to turn that paper in by 2. Daisy set the back of her hand on her forehead, trying to think what she had to do in these last days of her college career. A couple of exams later in the week. Today, though, she needed...
"I need to get high.
God, I feel hungover," Eric said. He wasn't. Neither was she. They hadn't gotten high in a week. No coke, no pot, no ecstasy. And since sex went hand in hand with substance, they hadn't made love in the same amount of time. Daisy was ambivalent to the loss of physical intimacy. Her brain, however, was a howling dog, craving a fix. Eric crawled over her to get up. Daisy's eyes slid along his body with a tired appreciation. He still worked out every day, but he wasn't eating much lately. Wasn't feeding the muscle. His chest and arms were defined, but his ribs showed. He bent over, trawling the floor for his clothes. From the gold chain around his neck swung 4 small charms. A saint's medal, a fish, a boat with his surname, Fiscara, engraved on its flat bottom, and a tiny pair of scissors. The necklace was an heirloom he was never without. He yawned as he dressed, tucking things in his pockets. He tugged on a shirt, ran hands through his dark blonde hair. Then he sat on the edge of the bed and pulled Daisy to sit up so he could fold her in his arms.
"You feel all right?"
he asked.
"I'm good," she said. "Lying."
They compared schedules to see where they overlapped, but neither seemed to know what was going on. They left it with a vague reassurance they'd meet up at some point. Eric took her head in his hands and kissed her. Forehead, each eyelid, right cheek, left, then her mouth. Daisy curled her fingers around his left wrist, her thumb running along the daisy tattooed beneath the heel of his hand. The fog lifted, and she saw the golden beauty in his face, tasted the blend of tenderness and ferocity in his love. Her hand slid up the nape of his neck, and she drew his forehead down on her shoulder.
"I love you," she said. "I love us."
He turned his head and breathed in deep against her neck. Then he left. Daisy lay in bed, listening to Eric's footsteps thump down the stairs, followed by the slam of the screen door. She didn't move. She'd missed ballet class this morning, but she didn't care. She didn't care about anything anymore. She was defeated before she began. The day was a yawning chasm of danger, and the only bridge across was getting high. When the need threatened to split her apart, she got up, dressed, and pulled her hair back. She walked out into the hot May afternoon with a fistful of 20s, leaving her little apartment on J Street and walking around the corner to David Alto's place. She went looking for it. Drugs, she insisted later. I went looking to get juiced. I didn't go looking for sex. David was awake, wet-haired and wearing nothing but shorts. He used to be slightly chunky with bulky muscles. Now he seemed more whittled away than Eric. Not skin and bones, but a slimness that came from stress and a drug-quelled appetite. It wasn't unattractive. He didn't seem surprised to see her. Squinting his bloodshot eyes against a ribbon of cigarette smoke, he batted her money away.
Wish I'd known you were coming, Marge. I already cut in.
I want to roll anyway, she said, irritated by the nickname, David's version of her real name, Marguerite.
In broad daylight? He said, grinning. I thought you only got ecstatic at night.
I need it now, she said.
I know, I know.
His voice turned gentle and soothing.
It's hard.
He searched a couple pairs of shorts and a jacket before he found his magic box, in this case an old Advil bottle with the label half scrubbed away. Daisy's palms started to sweat as he shook it like a maraca. She hated it.
Open your mouth and close your eyes, he said, and you will get a big surprise.
She stared at him. I hate you. Her eyes closed and her lips parted. The seconds squeezed by. His mouth pressed hers. A dart of his tongue, depositing an ecstasy pill behind her bottom teeth. She planted her hand in his chest and pushed him away.
You're an asshole, she said, and swallowed. Gotcha, he said, still grinning.
He sat on the couch, cutting the last bit of cocaine into a tiny line. Daisy sat a cushion away and put a foot on the coffee table. As she listened to the crisp sound of the razor's edge on glass, the high began to roll over her scalp and trickle down the back of her neck. She closed her eyes, wondering who was the first person to refer to an ecstasy high as rolling. She opened her eyes. Her eyelids were thick. Numb tongue, numb lips. The euphoria slid around her body like tectonic plates, locking her into place. Confidence across her shoulders, security bolstering her stomach, self-assuredness like a cape, warm, wonderful in her head. She was all right now. David sat back, sniffing and shivering.
God, he said, I love it, and it hates me.
He laced his hands behind his head and shut his eyes a moment. Then he turned his head toward Daisy, and his fingers moved in slow motion through the air. They touched the scars on her calf, two raised vertical lines running from knee to ankle on both sides.
Do they hurt?
He asked. Bits of them. This part here is numb. You could put a cigarette out on it. This part here is really sensitive, especially to hot and cold. She had rolled all the way over. She was flying now, transfixed by her own voice. David's fingers walked along her scar.
I dreamed about you last night.
Oh? He touched one of the sensitive parts and her skin twitched. Her long-sleeved t-shirt was too hot on her back and chest, while the fan blew too cool on her legs.
Nothing special, David said. Just you lying in a pool of blood on the stage, crying for me to make it stop. Make it stop, David, please make it stop.
He smiled at her startled expression.
That's the only way I dream about you now. Doesn't that suck, Marge? I can't even dream about you. It's like I'm not allowed anything good anymore.
She nodded, allowing him to touch her leg. He caressed the gunshot wound, a starburst pucker of skin above her left knee. She swallowed. Her throat was dry, but her mouth was watering.
It's almost over, David said. Nobody can wait to get the fuck out of here. Graduate and blow this joint. I feel like I want to go home, but I have nowhere to go. Only a few more weeks and everybody will scatter.
We'll stay in touch. The high was crystallizing. Daisy's thoughts were like ice.
No, we won't.
His palm pressed her scar, sliding up her thigh. The ice was getting sticky.
If Fish has any sense, he'll get you as far away from here as he can.
Fish was Eric. His last name, Fiskara, meant fisherman in Swedish.
You mean far away from you? Daisy said.
Sticky ice in her head. Strong hands on her legs. nipples growing hard in her bra, a damp, aching pulse beneath her skirt.
It felt good. I'd like to see anyone keep me away from you.
I should go. I'll go. I'll just feel it a little bit and I'll go. Just a taste.
Just a taste,
David whispered. Her eyes flew open as her thoughts became sound. He pushed her skirt up. No doubt he could smell her. He'd found her out. David, don't.
We'll all scatter. You won't see me again. Just give me my dreams back.
His fingers slid beneath the leg holes of her underwear. He was touching her, in places belonging only to Eric. This couldn't happen. She was private property. She was so high. She was so hot, so aware of the heat and the cold, and numb. I'm going, she said, pressing her eyes shut and then open again. Sticky eyes, trying to break out of her own skull.
Stay,
he said.
For a minute. You're so soft. You're the only soft, pretty thing I know anymore.
I'll leave you the cash, she said through a thick, damp mouth.
I don't want your money.
I don't have anything else to give. He touched where she was wet.
You have everything I want.
Just a little taste.
I want it so bad.
His finger hooked the leg of her underwear and pulled it aside. The fan blew cool. She could smell his wet hair as his head dipped. His cheek brushed the inside of her thigh where the blood raced through her grafted artery. His tongue, velvet, soft, wet. He was tasting her.
That should be enough. She needed to go. She couldn't move. Desire paralyzed her. His tongue. Oh, his tongue.
Her pores screamed out for it. Her hands wanted to grab his head and push his mouth deeper, harder. Feel his teeth. He'd be rough with her. He'd do anything for her. She only had to ask.
I don't care. It's all going to scatter.
David on his knees between her calves, the fingers of one hand sliding deep inside her, the fingers of the other reaching into the baggie on the coffee table and pinching a bit of sticky snow, holding it to her nose. She breathed in sharp and quick.
I hate you, she said. I know.
His fingers reached deeper.
Everyone hates me.
Hate was good. Pain was good. Eric wouldn't fuck her hard anymore, and lovemaking made them sick and afraid. She'd been numb since the last time. Now she was alive and on fire and wet and high, so high and sticky and bad, she didn't care. I hate what I am, she said. The truth was delicious in her mouth. Her shoulders relaxed in liberated relief. Sitting on David's ratty old couch, her skirt hiked up and her thighs open, high and slovenly with her scars on display and her true colors exposed. The stupid maw between her legs that had one job to do and blew it. A useless black vein of ugliness, like the nothingness of the nightmares that had been haunting her since she was shot last year. Maybe her nightmares were her truth. I hate what's dark in me. Make it stop, David, she whispered. His eyes flared wide.
Oh, honey, he said, pulling her up in his arms. I'd do anything.
The breeze from the ceiling fan blew on her face. She could taste herself in David's mouth, see her ugly pain reflected in his eyes. She could let it out, let it spill, and she didn't care what he thought, didn't care if she pleased him or made him proud. He wasn't hers to keep safe. Not hers to save. She hated him. His coke and his nastiness and sarcasm. David showing her how to roll high and come to pieces, making her need it so bad she'd fuck him to get it. They were up in his room now. A small, tight room, redolent with cigarette smoke, dirty laundry, and an unmade bed. Not Eric's oasis of neat, clean order. It was a hole. It smelled. You're gross, she said. He kissed her, but he tasted of her juice and cigarettes and she turned her mouth away. She took her own clothes off. If he thought he was getting the hot dancer's body of his dreams, he was dead wrong. She was 21 years old and looked like a bony old woman, scraped and bruised, an ugly, cowardly mess. He could have it. She pushed dirty clothes aside and lay down, waiting with an almost bored passion as he put a condom on. Take it. Take all this dark away. And if you can't, then make it darker. Later, when she could bear to think about it, she recalled his smile. She remembered the lift of his cheekbones and the flash of his teeth in the dim light, David's face in her hands while he was on top of her and inside her.
Oh, God, he said. Daisy.
She didn't recognize her name, didn't recognize herself under this boy. David, of all people. Strange.
You feel so good, he said, his voice strangled with pleasure. She did? She couldn't feel him at all. Come on top of me, he whispered. I always wanted to see you up over me.
He hooked an arm around her waist and rolled down to his back, pulling her along. Her hair got caught under his shoulder, a cry of annoyance as she tugged it free. David laughed. You're such an asshole, she said, spitting hair out of her face and tossing it back from her shoulders. And then she saw Eric standing in the doorway. What I feel has no name. In the middle. Why don't you start from the beginning? Daisy stared at the woman sitting across from her. Because I like starting in the middle. She felt foolish as soon as the words left her mouth. She was 24 years old. Snotting back like a sullen teenager served no purpose. Sorry, she said. I'm so tired, and I don't have much of a filter lately. The woman tilted her chin. Her smile was understanding. She had a head of salt and pepper curls, parted on the extreme side and anchored behind her ears. Her glasses looked expensive and trendy, but the rest of her looked secondhand thrift. Despite it being January, her feet were bare in worn, scuffed Birkenstocks. The orange toenail polish was chipped. Her name was Rita Temple. She was Daisy's third therapist in 5 weeks. What happened with the previous two? I couldn't connect, Daisy said. The first one, he was at the hospital. Maybe it was because he was a man. I don't know. But I walked into his office the first time, and it felt horrible. The air in the room was so oppressive, and it had such a clinical smell. It was an office like this, but it reeked of alcohol and disinfectant. I felt like I was in a gown on the exam table waiting to get a shot. She shrugged, embarrassment uncomfortably warm along her cheekbones. I had an instinctive reaction to both the space and him. I gave it a second chance, but the same thing happened. People have instincts for a reason, Rita said. The second therapist, Dr. Riley, she was nice. I saw her a few times.
This was also at the hospital?
Yeah, but she came to my room. Not that my room was all that great a space, but at least I had some of my things around me. I still felt like I couldn't connect. She was so quiet, and I know... She held up her hand to stop any verbal traffic. I know I'm supposed to talk and you're supposed to listen. I think I'm looking for a therapist with a streak of big sister, someone a little tough.
Why tough?
Daisy looked down at her takeout coffee cup.
I don't know.
But a little entity within her turned from its prim wooden chair facing the corner, lifted its woebegone face and whispered,
I've been such a bad girl.
Sounds like you want to be told off, Rita said.
Or punished.
Daisy rolled her lips in and blinked back the threat of tears. I fucked up, she said. I've fucked up my life so bad. She sniffed hard, scraped her fingernail against a stain on her pant leg, then looked around the room. The walls were painted a soft gray, silvery and warm, like sable. She had a weird impulse to run her hand along the surface, sure it would have a nap. The knickknacks adorning the end table looked personal and significant. A bowl of sea glass and several small corked bottles containing sand and labeled with names of beaches. Books lined the shelves like multicolored bricks, most battered and creased, obviously read and consulted many times.
See anything you like? Rita said.
A lot of children's books stuffed between the professional ones, Daisy pointed. The Betsy Tacy series. And what looks like every Maurice Sendak book ever written. I'm a huge fan. And something smells like lemon and lavender. The bowl on the table has both. Does it remind you of something? Home? Where is home? My parents' house in Pennsylvania. They have a little farm and orchard. My mother grows herbs. In summer, she'll have bunches of lavender hanging all over to dry, lemon verbena and mint. Her family was all perfumers, except her. She was a dancer, like me. Where do you dance? With the Metropolitan Opera Ballet. I've been on leave since December, when I went into the hospital. The silence pulled tight. Daisy reached to the bowl, crushed lavender buds between her fingers, and wished for a cigarette. While I was out, one of the tenors died, she said. Richard Versailles, right on stage in the Macropoulos case. He was climbing a ladder, singing the opening aria, had a heart attack and fell 20 feet to the stage. Dead, she shook her head. I don't know what any of that has to do with my little breakdown. Here's a tip, and this will apply to any therapist you may choose to work with. Don't worry about relevance. The first few months of therapy are about spilling your guts. Good, bad, ugly, and incoherent. Because you won't know what's relevant or isn't until it's all in front of you. More is more, Daisy murmured, not sure how she felt about months. Exactly. The plan is you spill and I sort. If you decide to stay, that is. Mulling over the plan, Daisy thought about taking her shoes off and pulling her feet under her. No sooner did she think it, when Rita kicked off one of her own sandals and drew that foot up beneath her knee. Try to find a beginning, Rita said, or just start somewhere. We can go backward or forward, it doesn't matter. She had a marble composition notebook in her lap. She opened it now, clicked the end of her pen. I love that sound, Daisy said, when the spine of a new book cracks. Rita smiled. So do I. So, Daisy said, it could start 6 weeks ago when I started cutting myself. She paused for a reaction, but Rita only kept writing. Or, Daisy said, puzzled, I could start 2 weeks prior when a broken window triggered some kind of flashback. A flashback to when I got shot. Now she waited for Rita to show a startled expression, to gasp or say, oh my goodness. Silence, except for the scratch of pen on paper. Or maybe I should start the day of the shooting, Daisy said, now throwing whatever she could think of in a careless volley. Or when I cheated on my boyfriend and destroyed my life. Or when I started doing drugs because I was high when I cheated on him. But the drugs started after the shooting, so it really goes back to then. I guess it has to start with the shooting. But really, it starts with Eric. Eric was your boyfriend? Daisy nodded. He was my life. My life started with him. And I fucked up and he left and I deserved it. But I can't leave. I can't leave it and it won't leave me and I don't know what to do anymore. She exhaled and took a sip of coffee, then sat up, choking as hot liquid dribbled over her chin. Damn it. Through the monologue, Rita had been taking notes. Her eyebrows went up and down. She gave short, brief nods, sometimes with a twist of her bottom lip, a terse sound of agreement in her throat, or a more lyrical, hmm. Now she looked up, pen still poised over the pages. This is good, she said. Daisy's own eyebrows rose. A first? She'd expected more nonverbal invitations, not praise for the mess she had made of her life. Glad you like it, she said, smiling as she ran her singed tongue along the roof of her mouth. Basically, you've given me a story in reverse, Rita said. Her smile was broad as she turned her notebook upside down and squinted at it. Now, how about we turn it around? Tears sprang to Daisy's eyes. She could feel her heart press against the inside wall of her chest in a terrible longing to be free. The little penitent gazed hopefully from its chair in the corner. Please turn it around. The unexpected simplicity of it stole her breath. The cup trembled in her hands. I want to turn it around,
she said. I hurt so much, and I can't... I've tried everything.
Rita put the end of her pen between her teeth. Behind her glasses, her eyes were kind, but something was mischievous in her expression.
You haven't tried me.
Daisy pressed the back of her hand into one damp eye, then the other. Something in her reached across the expanse of carpet and plugged into Rita Temple's socket. A small current began to thrum in her chest.
When did you graduate college?
Rita asked.
1993.
Nearly 3 years ago. It felt like 2 decades.
From?
It was a fine arts school outside Philadelphia.
Why was she being coy?
Was this the final test to decide if she'd come back again? Rita intertwined her fingers and set them down on her notebook.
Were you at Lancaster?
Daisy put her cup down, heeled off her shoes, and pulled both feet up. She drew one of the throw pillows into her lap, hugging the chocolate brown chenille to her stomach.
Yes, she said.
Partner both sides. Professor Marie Dell'Amici headed the ballet department at Lancaster University. Although 1989 marked her 15th year in America, she still spoke a mix of broken English and technical French, overlaid with a thick Italian accent that teetered on the verge of unintelligible. She had little memory for names, lumping most of the student body under darling or caro. If fond of you, she would recall your name, but either butcher it or convert it to the nearest Italian equivalent.
Margherita darling, she said now,
snapping her fingers and beckoning to Marguerite Bianco, one of the freshman students.
Vieni qui. I want to see you dance with Will. Will, caro, come.
Will was Will Kager, a Canadian sophomore. Marguerite hadn't any personal interaction with him yet, only observed his astonishing skills in class and heard him speaking fluent French around the student lounge. She also overheard him claiming Native American blood on his mother's side. He looked like a warrior. 6 feet 2 inches tall, straight-spined and proud, with tattooed arms and dark hair falling to his broad shoulders. Shoulders back and spine straight, Marguerite walked closer to him on the hard blocks of her pointe shoes. A lifetime of ballet training made acting confident second nature. Still, her stomach did a slow, wary somersault. Will Kager was gorgeous, with a magnificent and uncompromising presence, a pressing essence, she thought, as they shook hands. It leaned against her in a way that made her feet feel too big.
Daisy,
Will said, around a rubber band held tight in his teeth. His hand scraped his hair back into a thick tail.
Right? I hear your friends call you that.
Yes.
Daisy, short for Marguerite, he said. I get it. Is your family French?
My parents, I was born here.
Tu parles français?
Oui. Hands on her hips, she went up on her points. Shifting her weight from foot to foot, she stretched first one arm, then the other across her body.
Bon.
Will's hair was secure now, and he reached a hand to her.
Viens danser.
Come dance.
Keeping up a patter of conversational French, he engaged her in a few simple movements, and she followed where he led. Taking and releasing each other's weight, getting a feel for one another's balance and center, and although neither knew it yet, laying a foundation of trust, the bedrock of their partnership for the next 3 years. Most of Daisy's previous experience with partner work involved uncertain boys holding her too hard, or not hard enough, a lot of grabbing, falling, fumbling, and misunderstanding, a lot of hard work, the end result never satisfying, never looking how she expected a pas de deux to look. But within a minute of dancing with Will, Daisy knew he was different. Although he dwarfed her in height, their bodies were proportioned the same. When he proffered his palm, it was exactly where she needed it to be. Excitement began to pulse along her veins. He was not only confident, but competent. His hands were strong, but they didn't grab. They felt like an extra pair of her own hands. She went into arabesque, on one leg with the other straight behind, and he took her waist, moved her back and forth over her supporting leg, experimenting with her center of gravity.
Here, he said, squinting in the mirror. No, more here. This is your axis.
Right there, she said, perfectly balanced.
pulling up out of her waist and letting her arms float free. Not knowing where she stopped and he began was a thrilling sensation. Their reflection made the pretty picture she'd always imagined. She smiled, feeling all the years of training coalesce and click. This was ballet. She brought her points together, feet crossed tight. Will moved her like a metronome from side to side, catching her lightly in one elbow, then the other, letting her fall further with each pendulum swing, holding off on catching her until the last second. She closed her eyes, trusting him.
"You're easy,"
he said. "Don't tell my father." He laughed and let her fall low, arching back in his arms this time, her head nearly to the floor. The blood rushed to her face. His hand, spread wide between her shoulder blades, was strong. He brought her upright, and her arms slid across his broad shoulders. She felt power without bulk. Everything about him was long and lean. The strength of his muscles lay vertically. "I think we're going to be friends," Will said to the mirror, as they practiced supported pirouettes. "Bet you say that to all the freshmen," she said. The color was high up in her face. Exertion made a film of sweat creep up from the neckline of her leotard and bloom in two splotches on her ribcage.
"I do, and they all believe me, especially the boys."
Daisy kept her eyes on her reflection, but her antenna perked up. Will was a rare bird, a straight man in the ranks of male ballet dancers. According to conservatory gossip, he was straight with a slight bend. Daisy found this fascinating. Growing up in the world of dance, she had no shortage of gay friends. Someone openly bisexual, however, was a novelty.
"Sorry, I've never partnered a left turner,"
he said, catching her as she teetered off balance.
"That was my fault. Try again."
It took several tries to work out the mechanics. His instinct was to support her with his left hand, which only got in her way as she turned counterclockwise. She kept smashing into him. Marie came over.
"Will, what are you doing to the little flower? You're going to break her."
She grabbed his left wrist and held it captive in the small of his back.
"I'm surprised at you. I thought you partner both sides."
Will's head whipped back over his shoulder, and Daisy burst into laughter. The professor blinked innocent eyes and patted Will's cheek.
"Keep practicing, caro."
"Damn,"
Will said, watching her walk away.
"You see what she did there?"
Hands braced on knees. Daisy nodded.
"Come on," he said, holding out a hand. "I need to fix this or my reputation won't precede me."
In a few more tries, his right hand had the knack of providing discreet support for the double spin Daisy could accomplish on her own. The left came in at the last minute and coaxed the momentum into a third turn.
"Definitely friends,"
he said. On both sides, they would be extraordinary partners and close friends within a month. And turning counterclockwise would work to their advantage in another 3 years. When a boy called James Dow shot the fingers off Will's left hand and set the name Lancaster forever into memory. A crime of passion. It went from a geographical location to an event, a singular proper noun loaded with context and definition, like Verdun, Omaha Beach, Dealey Plaza, Kent State. Lancaster once carried the same cachet as Juilliard or Tisch. Now, it was a battlefield. "I was at Lancaster that day," Daisy said to Rita Temple. April 19, 1992, was a Sunday afternoon. In the theater of Mallory Hall, Lancaster's Performing Arts Complex, the first tech rehearsal for the spring dance concert was in full swing. Daisy was on stage when James Dow came out of the wings with a gun. He'd already shot and killed 5 students backstage. James was a ruthless killer and a crack shot in the wings. But stepping into the spotlights and setting the Glock pistol sights on his former lover, Will, turned him inept.
"Or he wasn't shooting to kill," Rita said.
"What do you mean?" "From what you've told me so far, Will seems to have been the primary target. He and James had a relationship, but Will broke it off."
"Yes,
it was a crime of passion." "That's the consensus. Will was the target. But when James went to fire, you were in the way.
In the wrong place at the wrong time."
"My gut reaction, and I wasn't there. But when you described how he fired, My immediate thought was James was trying to shoot Will without shooting you. Daisy stared at her feet.
Or do you think you were a target as well?
He killed all those kids backstage, Daisy said. He shot both Will and I. Then he jumped off the stage to keep shooting. I guess you can look at it 100 different ways, but nobody will ever know his plan or intentions. He's dead. My friends and my teacher are dead. And the rest of us? We died in different ways. Will took one bullet straight through his left side. Another blew his left hand to a pulp. The impact of the shots made him buck and rear, throwing Daisy off his shoulder where she had been perched. James's third shot hit her while she was still up in the air. Through the left thigh, nearly severing a branch of her femoral artery.
Do you remember it?
Rita asked.
No, Daisy said. Invisible fingers had reached into her mind that day, found the flame of memory and pinched it out.
What she told of April 19 was what she had been told.
You were awake, people said.
The EMTs asked you things and you answered. I heard you talk. Oh yeah, you were moaning in pain. You screamed at one point, I remember. It was strange to be told of an event she participated in, even played a starring role. Surreal to hear what happened after she was shot, and before the police and the EMTs got into the theater, and to remember none of it. As Daisy and Will lay bleeding out, James jumped off the stage into the orchestra seats. He fired right and left, filling the theater with chaos as students fled or hid. Marie Dellamici was fatally wounded, shot in the chest and head. James then started up the aisle toward the rear of the house, heading toward the lighting booth where Daisy's boyfriend, Eric Viscara, was trapped. Until a couple weeks ago, I had no memory of the shooting, Daisy said. None. The last thing I remembered was walking down the aisle toward the stage, going up to rehearse with Will. Then I woke up in the hospital. She leaned forward and rolled up the left leg of her sweatpants. Two long scars down either side of her calf, from knee to ankle. Further up past her knee, a starburst of puckered flesh on her inner thigh. This is the actual gunshot wound, she said. It got the artery. They repaired it with a graft, but I developed something called compartment syndrome. Your limb rejects the oxygen coming back to it and pressure starts to build up. Her fingers ran down the sides of her shin, along the ridges of flesh. They had to make these cuts to relieve the pressure. Fasciotomy, Rita said. This is what I woke up to. She rolled her pant leg back down.
It must have been horrible.
I didn't know what happened. It made no sense to me, even when they explained it. The injury, or that it was James? Both. I remembered nothing and understood nothing. But some weeks ago, a memory came back. You said a window broke? Daisy nodded. The sound of the breaking glass, and all at once, I remembered.
Remembered what, specifically?
When James shot out the windows of the lighting booth.
Where your boyfriend was.
Yes.
You actually watched him shoot the windows.
Yes, from where I was lying on the stage, I saw them all break. And when you started cutting yourself, what did you use?
Glass?
Pompous of Love. After their second partnering class, Will offered to buy Daisy lunch.
You're one of our Brighton scholarships, he said, when they were ensconced in a booth at the campus center.
As were you, Daisy said, winding the string of her tea bag tight around the pouch and squeezing. The Brighton was Lancaster Conservatory's top scholarship and awarded full tuition to two incoming freshmen. He unwrapped a turkey sandwich.
What else do you hear? He bit off a third of the corner.
She rolled her lips in, thinking. You went to private school in Montreal, so I assume you're from Quebec. You were in the junior company of Le Grand Ballet Canadien. Arturo Castellano and Andre Mejia were your teachers. You're part Native American.
How'd you know that?
Will asked, shielding his full mouth against the back of one fist. I heard you telling someone. Your dad's name is Maurice, which I also overheard.
And my mom is the Pompous of Love, Will said.
I see what you did there. She liked him. She didn't feel a physical attraction, good-looking and charismatic as he was, but in his company, she felt on,
as if they were dancing verbally, partnering each other through conversation, which was exhilarating in its own way. Kager, though, she said. Sounds German to me. I heard you mention sisters the other day in class, so at least two, but I don't know if older or younger. You study martial arts, that's no secret. You were offered a core position at Ballet Canadien, but instead you took the scholarship here. Will wiped his mouth and sat back from the table, eyeing her.
You don't seem the spying type. I think you're one of those rare people who shut up and listen, and those crazy eyes of yours probably don't miss a thing.
Daisy smiled into her tea. She was used to comments about her intense blue-green eyes.
Kager is German, Will said. Mom is the native Canuck, St. Brunswick, not Quebec. Two sisters, one older, one younger. And I came here because my old man wouldn't let me take the Corps contract without having at least 2 years of college. He's the intellectual in the family.
Daisy nodded and bit into her own sandwich.
Now you, Will said, and held up a finger. First of all, you're a baby.
Stung, Daisy flicked her eyes up to him. She chewed methodically and stared, waiting for clarification.
I hear you're only 17. Did you skip a grade?
She shook her head. Just born late in the year. I'll be 18 in December. Another finger went up.
Outside of dance, the two words I hear associated with you are rich and virgin.
She nearly choked.
What? You know David Alto?
Who?
Huh. I thought he would have made a move by now.
What are you talking about?
So David's a rat.
A rat?
Technical theater guy. Leo Graham's army. You rarely see them in Mallory. They usually roam around down in the basement shops and then emerge for production, like rats.
I see.
David roams above ground, though. He's got a thing for dancers, and he loves the observation windows above Studio B. Anyway, he's got the hots for you.
Daisy raised her eyebrows. You know this? You guys are friends, then?
Friends? Will rolled his eyes. We have some overlapping edges. Theater arts, and we both speak French. I like him in small doses. Anyway, I've been getting an earful from him about you. He's definitely the spying type, hence the words rich and virgin.
Daisy put up her own finger. I'm not rich.
Gladwin isn't the slums.
Daisy brought her teeth together and exhaled carefully. Fair enough, but I was born in Philly. I grew up in Fairmount. We didn't move to Gladwin until I was 14. Certainly I'm not poor, but my father worked his ass off to make a good life. Will reached and pushed her finger back down into her fist.
What does he do?
Daisy sat back, smiling, her arms crossed. Are you asking or spying?
Will smiled back, his bottom lip disappearing under a side tooth. Asking, he said quietly.
He's a plumber. Or was. He sold the business last spring, and he and my mom bought a place out in Lancaster County.
What kind of place?
A little farm, mostly orchards, and they want to put in a vineyard someday. It's their dream.
Is it yours?
I love it there, she said, laughing a little. Funny thing about me, I like to be dancing, or I like to be at home. And my mom is one of those people who make a beautiful home wherever they go. Will took a long sip of his soda.
And what about Virgin?
What do you think? She smiled at him over the rim of her cup, and their eyes held.
Pure, but not stupid, he said under his breath.
Her eyes itched,
but she didn't blink.
Are those your own words for me? He looked away, laughing. Victorious, she let her eyelids close.
Anyway, about David, Will said.
I wouldn't know him if I passed him on the street, she said. So I don't know how he would know I'm a virgin, unless it was a lucky guess. Will dug into his shirt pocket for his pack of cigarettes and thumped them on the table.
Or talking to the right people.
Why are you telling me this? She asked. He exhaled a plume of smoke and ran a hand along the back of his neck. His eyes flicked over her shoulder, then his face twisted in a look of chagrin.
Look, don't kill me.
What?
He's coming this way.
Who, David?
Don't turn around.
Her mouth hung open. Did you buy me lunch as a setup?
I bought you lunch because I wanted to buy you lunch, but Will looked around miserably. I also owe Dave a favor.
Jesus Christ.
A voice behind her. Speaking.
Monsieur Alto,
Will flicked his middle finger against his thumb and sent the pack of cigarettes spinning toward Daisy. She took one, glaring at him, then turned a placid face up to the newcomer. Her first impression was he looked like a bear, a sturdy, well-fed bear with a long torso and short limbs. His hair was brown, curly, and rumpled, with longish sideburns. He was cute, and he slid into the booth next to Daisy with a little too much confidence. She practically felt his ego sit in her lap.
"Hi, I'm David," he said.
"Of course you are," she said.
"This is Daisy," Will said, flicking his Zippo lighter.
Beneath a table, he slid his foot close by Daisy's, tapping a soft, supporting Morse code on the toe of her sneaker. She pressed her ankle bone hard against his, stilling him. She didn't like to be tapped or patted.
"How are you?" David said.
She leaned the cigarette into the flame, took a drag.
"At what?"
She exhaled smoke in David's direction. He waved it away, his dark brown eyes hungry. She worried it was a good comeback, but the wrong answer.
Positive I'm dying.
"I was young," Daisy said.
Rita continued to sit quietly as Daisy tried to put her thoughts in order. The silence pressed her to hurry up.
"That must sound ridiculous to you," she said. "I mean, I'm only 24, but I feel so old."
She ached with weariness. The skin stretching over her bones hurt.
17 when I started college," she said.
"It was a lot to get used to. The dance program and the academics and the social life, too. All these new people, new rules."
Rita nodded with a small smile that seemed nostalgic.
"I had boyfriends in high school. I wasn't ignorant of physical relationships. I just hadn't gone all the way yet. And David Alto was..."
A wave of heat swept over her, a prickling anxiety at the back of her neck, creeping down her arms.
"Are you all right, Daisy?"
She drew in a breath.
"It's hard to talk about him.
Do you feel anxious?"
"I feel like shit."
She lifted her trembling hands from her lap.
"This is how I go around feeling. Sick and scared, I hate it." The panic swelled in her, threatening to blow her limb from limb. "I hate everything. I hate what I did. I hate who I am.
I swear I'm dying," she whispered.
A bitter laugh spilled up out of her throat.
"At least once a day, I feel like some kind of shit, and at least once a week, I'm positive I'm dying."
Her fingers clenched open and shut. She felt herself poised on the edge of a secret. And like a bad dance partner, the anxiety was grabbing at her, upsetting her balance and knocking her off the edge of the world.
"It builds up in me," she said. The words dripped from her like a cold syrup.
"It's like my chest is going to explode, like my skin is going to crack open. And either I go running into the street, or..."
"That's when I..."
Rita's eyes never left Daisy's. Her glasses caught the light as she nodded.
"Try this," she said. "Take a deep breath. Now hold it. When you let it out, envision blowing a bubble in front of you. Make it anything, soap, crystal, bubble gum. Make the shape with your breath. Hold it in the air or in your hands."
Daisy slowly exhaled and envisioned her breath flowing down a long tube like a glassblower's pipe, a glowing red sphere emerging from the end, cooling into pale, transparent blue.
"Do you have it?"
It shimmered through the air, floating iridescent in front of her, her hands rolled up in her lap, cupped like a base for it.
"I have it," she said.
"Put the words into it. Start with when your skin is going to crack open, when you want to run into the street."
"That's when I want to cut myself," Daisy said.
The words floated into the sphere, black obsidian letters, slimy with mold and moss. The bubble flared once, alarmed, then its blue intensified. The black letters burst into flame. "Now pinch the bubble off like you're tying a balloon. Do you have it?" Daisy nodded. It didn't work with her visualization, but she got the idea. "Now let it go." In her mind, Daisy simply threw the ball against the wall and watched it shatter with a detached satisfaction. Her shoulders relaxed. The next breath into her chest was warm and soothing.
"That's a good trick," she said.
She listened to the silence, dissected all the layers of sound within it.
Sometimes it's like my skin is begging me to cut it, she said,
to release it.
Daisy nodded, her eyes dissolving. I haven't cut in 5 weeks, but I can't stop wanting to. I think about it all the time. The therapists at the hospital gave me all these tricks and I try them. I run a nail file on my fingertips. I use a stress ball. I cut paper. It does nothing. I draw on myself with magic markers, but it doesn't come close. I need the slice. I need to hurt and I want to bleed and I want...
Rita steepled her fingers beneath her chin.
You want, she said.
Yet you haven't cut yourself in 5 weeks.
That's tremendous. Daisy stared.
I'm not being sarcastic, Rita said. I hear want, and I hear need, but I don't hear I did it.
If you were stripped and searched right this minute, would we find fresh cuts on your body?
Daisy shook her head.
Then that's fantastic. But I want to do it. Every day I wake up wanting it.
Rita spread her hands. I want to eat a bag of potato chips for breakfast every day. I don't.
You want to cut every day.
You don't. Wanting and doing are two different things, and in this scenario, you're not doing kicks wants ass.
Daisy sat back, slightly stunned.
How do you keep from doing it? Rita said. What stops you from caving into the want?
Well, I'm seeing someone, Daisy said. He's the one who made me get help.
So he knows. And if I cut, he'll see. He'll be the first to know again.
And it stops me.
Rita nodded.
It's good you have him.
No, Daisy said. I'm a shitty girlfriend. I have no business dating anyone. I'm not over Eric. I still love him. I cheated on him, and I may as well be cheating now. I hate what I have become. I want myself back. I want it back the way it was before, and I want Eric. I want him back so bad.
Shoulders heaving, she buried her face in her hands, rubbing against the hot saltiness puddled in the creases of her palms.
He doesn't know where I am. He doesn't care where I am anymore. I've ruined everything. I want to cut away the part of me that wrecked it. Cut that part of my life away. Make it go away. Just make this all go away.
Soft footsteps on the rug, and Rita set a box of tissues down on the seat of the couch.
What you do in here, Daisy, she said, in this office, is a safe form of cutting. A productive form of cutting. You slice yourself open, not physically, but mentally. Because this isn't about who you are or what you do. This is about how you feel. Cutting into your physical entity isn't going to make how you feel go away. Cutting into how you feel, though.
What I feel has no name,
Daisy said, crying hard.
Sobs like glass bubbles burst from her lungs and smashed in pieces on the floor until she was spent, a sodden lump on the couch. Her forehead felt swollen and heavy.
I'd like to help you find names for what you feel, Rita said. I'd like to help you find yourself.
Daisy nodded, perplexed that the woman seemed to be asking permission to work with her instead of the other way around. Rita took a casual glance at her wrist.
We're nearing the end. I don't want you to leave here this upset. Let's do some breathing. Try to get you back to harbor.
All right,
Daisy whispered, taking another tissue. Do you feel like you could come back and see me?
Daisy wiped her eyes. She looked over at the bookshelf and the Betsy Tacy series. Sweet little girls in pen and ink, arm in arm, braids and curls flying, simple and carefree. She looked at Rita, the crazy curls and funky glasses and chipped orange toenail polish.
I want to, Daisy said.
Humble Invisibility. Will and Daisy stood at the bulletin board outside Studio A. It was a week after auditions for the conservatory's fall dance concert, and roles were posted that morning. Will let out a slow, soft whistle.
Well, well, well. A little shakeup is good for everyone, but this is a small earthquake.
Daisy stared at the cast list. Marie was choreographing a new ballet to works by Johann Sebastian Bach. Daisy found her name in the two ensemble pieces, the opening beret from the suite in E minor, and the finale to the Brandenburg Concerto. Being a freshman, it was what she expected. But in the middle of the cast list, her name appeared again. Prelude in F minor. Kathy Curran, Christine Chung, Jessica Barnes, Megan Lamb, Daisy Bianco.
This doesn't happen, Will said. No slur on your talent, but freshmen don't get solos. Brighton or no Brighton.
A little further down from the prelude line, the surprises kept coming. Siciliano from Sonata No. 2, Kathy Curran, and Matt Lombardi. Understudy / matinee, Will Kager and Daisy Bianco. Do you think Marie made a mistake doing this? Daisy asked quietly.
Mistake? No. Rules, especially unwritten rules, are meant to be broken. Your technique runs circles around some of the upperclassmen, and they know it. All the same, I don't exactly envy you. People are going to be pissed.
What's the best way to handle this? Daisy said. She had an idea, but wanted to hear if Will's matched.
Head down, shut up. Stay in the back row and dance well. Be nice, but don't try to be one of them. Don't show off and don't show them up, if you can help it.
Exactly what I thought.
And listen.
In what had become a familiar gesture, Will put his palm flat on the crown of Daisy's head.
Marie might be testing you. See what you're made of. Know what I mean?
Daisy nodded.
I won't shadow you like a bodyguard, but I got your back. Don't let them see you cry. Come cry to me afterward.
Daisy took the pen attached to the bulletin board and initialed the four places where her name appeared. She hitched the strap of her dance bag further on her shoulder and prepared to embark on a campaign of humble invisibility. Let me go in first, she said. They exchanged three quick kisses, left cheek, right, left again.
Fuck 'em, he said.
Walking into the studio, Daisy told herself she was only imagining the break in the buzzing conversation. The eyes turned in her direction were mere coincidence.
Head down, shut up, she thought,
her own eyes scanning the ranks for one familiar and friendly face. From one of the back row bars, Taylor Revelle, a fellow freshman, put down her knitting and raised her palm. Her foot nudged aside the dance bag she'd set on the floor, holding a place for Daisy. Suffused with relief, Daisy walked over, smiling, and saying hello to anyone who looked at her. Taylor had corn-colored hair with bangs and a smattering of freckles across her long nose. Her teeth were long as well, making her slightly horse-faced. She was convinced her chin was too weak for ballet, an insecurity which gave her the mannerism of sticking her bottom jaw out. Marie lovingly called her Il Duce.
You've got about 5 red laser dots on your back, Taylor said, out the side of her mouth. You're in the crosshairs.
A quick glance confirmed Jessica Barnes was staring and whispering behind a hand to Megan Lamb.
Where Barnes goes, little Lamb follows, Taylor said.
You might not want to stand too close, Daisy said, pulling on her canvas slippers. Dancers have notoriously bad aim. Shipwreck. I remember saying it, Daisy said. Dancers have notoriously bad aim. How's that for irony? Her chuckle fell flat, and Rita's mouth barely twitched in a smile. Anyway, Daisy said, tucking a foot under one knee. It was tough adjusting that first month of school. I felt a little lonely.
Did you have a roommate?
I did. Sarah. But she... Looking back now, I wonder if she was depressed. She left school by the beginning of October, and I barely got a chance to know her. I'm not the type to leap into friendships anyway. I remember seeing girls in my dorm who were pricking their fingers and exchanging blood 2 days after they'd met. A month later, they were barely on speaking terms or rooming with someone else. I'm more cautious, socially. Sometimes I wonder if it came across as cold. She picked at a loose thread in the brown chenille pillow that was becoming her best friend during therapy. A lot of times, high school felt like a shipwreck. A social shipwreck with everyone in desperate survival mode and only one lifeboat. Everyone fighting for a seat, clinging to the sides and beating each other with oars to keep their spot. I can't stand that kind of chaos when people create drama for the sake of it. Dance was always my haven in that regard. A solid pontoon boat that never tipped over. Then I got to college and everything reversed. Socially, it was more chill, but dance became a complete shipwreck. Was it more competitive?
Competitive to the point of toxic, Daisy said, and catty. These ridiculous, unwritten rules in class about who stands where at the bar. All this idiotic posturing within a dumb pecking order. The boys weren't so bad, but the junior and senior girls were a pack of bitches. She was pulling the loose thread in the pillow too tight and making the stitches pucker. She smoothed it out, taking a deep breath. The company I danced with in Gladwin had a hierarchy, but it served a purpose. You were mentored by older students. They'd help if you were struggling or applaud your accomplishments. At Lancaster, your accomplishments got a shrug and an eye roll, like it was beneath upperclassmen to recognize talent. And if you were struggling, Jesus, they were almost gleeful about it. What's the word when you take delight in someone's misfortune? Schadenfreude, Rita said. They adored someone's bad day, I swear. I spent the first month of school thinking I'd made a mistake. I was really unhappy. She took a sip of her coffee. It got worse after I was cast in the Bach variations. I felt targeted, disliked, and for no good reason.
Did you talk to Marie about it?
No, that's not how it works in ballet.